11 days till the kickoff to start the college football season for the Tigers and for the Raging Cajuns. With that in mind, we'll get a report on the goings-on at Georgia Southern and at Mississippi State. And another preseason list is out, and number 7 is on it again. A unanimous All-American a year ago. What does Grant Delpit do for an encore? We'll learn all about number 7 today, Tuesday, August 20th, 2019.
And the 0-1 to Murphy. Swing and a well-hit ball deep to left field. Going and going and goodbye, baseball. Tom Murphy with his second home run of the night. Holy smokes, what a run for Tom Murphy. This one is way out of here. The Mariners now lead the Rays 9-1.
Swing and a home run. Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah. It goes into Big Mac land. And the Cardinals lead it 3-0. That is number 22 for Paul DeJong.
Here's a swing and a long one to left. Tagged, bagged, a home run for Abreu. And the White Sox now lead. And they lead 4-2. How about that?
Baseball enjoying the last moments of singularity, because pretty soon football will take over. You heard some of the highlights from around the big leagues yesterday as we get you the updated standings. The Yankees lead the AL East by 10 over the Rays, by 16 over the Red Sox. The Twins with a 2-game lead over the Indians in the AL Central. And the Astros with an 8-game lead over the Athletics in the AL West. Over in our friendly National League, the Braves by 5 over the Nationals, by 9 over the Phillies and the Mets in the NL East. In the NL Central, my Redbirds of St. Louis with a 0.5-game lead over the Cubs, 3 games better than the Brew Crew. And it's no contest in the NL West as the Dodgers with an 18.5-game cushion over the second-place San Francisco Giants. There's your baseball report. Good afternoon and welcome, everybody. We've got lots of football to talk about today. My main man, CD, back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB 1037 The Game. You can call us at 337-706-0111. You can email me, askjordy@gmail.com. Askjordy@gmail.com. We go to the mailbag from a question already. This coming from Sean. Jordy, are we getting a new long snapper? Thomas Morstead has had to be an acrobat for 2 weeks in a row. He sure has. High snaps. That's something that the Saints need to work on with Eric McCoy. There's no question about that. Morstead is valuable back there. He's got great hands. He's a great holder. He and Lutz have a great rapport amongst them. There's a trust there. So he'll be fine. We just got to get the snap right. And that just comes with constant repetition. And I'm sure that Sean Payton will address that. We'll hear from Sean Payton in this hour of the program. Let me tell you what we have coming up. Wilson Alexander, around 2:30 this afternoon, will join us. He writes for The Advocate. He did an in-depth study on the best player on the LSU football team, and that's Grant Delpit, a unanimous All-American a year ago. There's only been 9 of them in the history of LSU. Unanimous. That means every committee that puts out an All-American team has him on it. Every one of them. Unanimous. Wearing number 7. It's a jersey he put over his bed at night. It was Tyrann Mathieu's number, the Honey Badger. And when he would close his eyes to go to bed at night, that's the last thing he would see. And he dreamt about it and dreamt about it. Now he's trying to become the best of the best at LSU. So we'll talk to Wilson Alexander about what makes Grant Delpit tick. And boy, is he, my gosh, he is the consummate weapon for Dave Aranda. He can be here, he can be there, he can be anywhere on the field doing a myriad of things. He's great against the pass, great against the run. He does everything. He does everything. So we'll learn about Grant Delpit. In hour number two, after Hot Topics, Caitlin Sells will join us of the George Ann. She covers Georgia Southern. Their quarterback has been cleared. Shea Wirtz, from that cocaine charge that was dropped. It literally was bird poop on the hood of the car. And Shea Watts will, their leading offensive threat of a year ago, will be in the lineup when Georgia Southern's Eagles come to Tiger Stadium. It's the first time these two teams have ever played on a football field. Raging Cajun fans, very familiar, being in the Sun Belt. It's a team that surprised everybody. They went 6-2 in the league a year ago, 10-3 overall. With Chad Lunsford in his first year as a head coach, he is the big man on campus. So we'll find out about Georgia Southern from Caitlin Sells. The Raging Cajuns, of course, open up against SEC foe Mississippi State on the same day in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Early kickoff, Logan Lowry of the Tupelo Daily Journal will join us, and we'll talk all things Mississippi State in hour number two, just to give Tiger and Raging Cajun fans kind of an insight as to what to expect. Clemson and Alabama, 1-2 in the AP poll. Clemson and Alabama dominating the Associated Press preseason All-American team. All starts with the quarterback, and Trevor Lawrence of Clemson headlines the team. He's got two teammates from the top-ranked Tigers with him on the first team. Alabama has three first-team selections with Jerry Jeudy, the All-American wide receiver, along with defensive lineman Raekwon Davis and Baton Rouge linebacker Dylan Moses. Tua Tagovailoa selected to the second team. They've got eight players from the Southeastern Conference on the first team. It just means more in the SEC. It just does. So, again, Grant Delpit, first team preseason All-American on the AP team, and Christian Fulton, second team cornerback on the preseason All-American team. Dave Aranda should have some fun, shouldn't he? He's going to have all kinds of movable parts. It really, really, really could be something special to see. LSU's going to take on five teams that are ranked in the AP Top 25, starting with number 10 Texas in week number two. It's the same old familiar foes, number 2 ranked Alabama, number 8 Florida, number 12 Texas A&M, and number 16 Auburn. It's a tough schedule. Texas on the road, Alabama on the road. Very interesting, to say the very, very least. So we've got lots to talk about today. My main man, CD, good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Jordy, on a Tuesday afternoon. A lot of great things to kind of wind up talking about. Obviously, you brought it up perfectly at the beginning of the program, saying you had two big-name All-Americans get named by the Associated Press. Definitely a good time to be Grant Delpit right about now. It seems to be, once again, a unanimous All-American.
Yeah, and everybody is talking about the impact of a Joe Burrow and his ability to stretch the field vertically is one of the factors that separates the talented, really good team from a team that actually gets close to the ceiling and contends. So can LSU get a quarterback that has a rating that accomplishes just that? Can he play this season like he did toward the end of last season when he was really, really effective? So with LSU hosting Florida and Auburn and Texas A&M and visiting Texas, Mississippi State and Alabama, Joe Burrow is going to have to play. going to have to play really, really good. So we'll delve into all of these topics as we get closer and closer. Meanwhile, the Saints back on the practice field. They've looked at the tape. Now it's time to get ready. This is their last really big opportunity with the New York Jets. The last preseason game nobody even cares about, nobody worries about. Let's just get through it. In fact, they ought to just drop it. Players ought to just get sick and say, we just can't play and get it over with. But, of course, that will never happen, just like Antonio Brown is still holding out, trying to get a helmet. And believe me, he will be playing when it counts because he wants to get his paycheck. And the paychecks start week one. So he'll be there. Trust me. All right. Let's take our first time out of the day. When we come back, we'll start off with the New Orleans Saints. We'll hear more from Sean Payton, several of the Saints, as they are trying to get down to their best team of 53. How many position battles are still out there? Who's going to be the group that are the wide receivers? Who's going to be the return factor? All these things. We'll talk about it next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. We're on Acadiana's number one sports station, no doubt. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Come on back.
You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
All right, we're back. ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets, about 62 of them in southern and central Louisiana. Everything under the sun that you need. Discounts daily. Specials daily. Great food, great drinks, great snacks all day long, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, you can't shop right at all. Before we get to the Saints, I know everybody, you got to focus in on the first opponent. You got to get ready for that, but that's the team's responsibility. We as fans can kind of look ahead a little bit. Georgia Southern, triple option, all that stuff for LSU? Yes. But look, LSU's got more players, more talented players. They'll win the game. Just a question of by how much. It's the next game that's going to be interesting. And remember, heading into LSU's Week 2 game against Texas on September the 7th, LSU's winning percentage in the past decade versus Power 5 non-conference games to begin the season is 900. LSU's 9-1 in those 10 games. Wins over Syracuse twice, Washington twice, Miami, Oregon, Wisconsin, TCU, North Carolina. They won those games by an average of 12.6 points. 12.6 points. Not very close. The only loss, up at Green Bay by 2 to Wisconsin. So LSU against Power 5 non-conference opponents early in the season is money in the bank. So hopefully they'll get to 10-1 against the Longhorns of Texas. So we can look ahead. I know coaches hate that with a passion. All right, we got some Saints sound for you. The talk of the early camp for the Saints was the play of receiver Emmanuel Butler. He was turning heads, making great plays day in and day out. Then he gets hurt, doesn't play, gets into in preseason game number 2, goose eggs, nothing. Sean Payton gives us an update on Emmanuel Butler.
Yeah, look, we've seen some, you guys have all seen it, And now it's just seen it on a more consistent basis. You know, I think these next 2 weeks will be important for him. You know, he came back after missing a little bit of time. But, yeah, he's high-pointed the ball well. I've seen strong hands in traffic. And, you know, a lot of things you want to see from a young player.
points the ball. It means he goes up, uses that 6'4" frame, and goes and gets it. Okay, there's a lot of talk about Taysom Hill. Okay, and I've said this till I'm blue in the face. I think he's a terrific player, fun to watch. Is he the heir apparent to the quarterback position when Drew Brees leaves? Oh, whoa, slow your roll on that one. Slow down. And there was a lot of talk from our good friend of the program, Jeff Duncan, comparing him to Steve Young. And that kind of like, are you kidding me? Steve Young was like a Heisman Trophy candidate. Taysom Hill got hurt all the time at BYU. Big difference. Well, Sean Payton talked about the comparisons of Hill to the lefty Hall of Famer Steve Young.
Well, if you look back at Steve's career, and people don't remember his time before he came into the NFL, you had a very athletic player that that I think advanced when he got to San Francisco, and he always had great ability with his legs. So you're trying to create visions for player, no different than how you'd evaluate, you know, how you see Teddy progress and what he can be. And I think that that's the business we're in.
Yeah, I don't know. Steve Young, pretty good. Pretty darn good thrower of the football. I can still remember that pass over the middle in Candlestick to beat the Saints in the playoffs. Just heartbreaking. To T.O., just, ugh. Anyway, but Sean Payton's happy with his quarterbacks. He says he's seen growth from both T's, Taysom and Teddy.
I said this yesterday and a week ago. I think we've seen a significant growth with both he and Teddy. You know, Teddy's full second year and Taysom the same. I mean, you know, we're seeing things take place on a day-to-day basis that maybe weren't happening a year ago.
And that's always progress. So keep that in mind. It'll be interesting to see what happens in preseason game number 3. Drew Brees wants to play all the time. Does he play? Probably. How much? It depends on how effective he is the first time he touches the ball, what kind of drive he puts together. If he marches them down the field and they score, done. See you later. If it's a 3-and-out, may play him again. But that's up to Sean Payton and Pete Carmichael and the group. One player that stood out is a high draft pick by the Saints, the former Florida Gator, C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Sean Payton talked about the defensive back.
We would consider Buffalo because his natural position would be a safety. So I don't know that you could take any strong safety and play him in that position, but one of the things that we felt he did very well in college was play in that slot position. So he got more reps at it in Buffalo yesterday than the first week. First week he played more safety snaps. So a lot of it depends on the game plan and who we're playing, but yeah, it's one of the things that we feel like he can do well.
When he says in Buffalo, that's a defensive formation, defensive package, not the city of Buffalo, New York. Here's C.J. Gardner-Johnson talking about what he picked up and the difference from game one now to preseason game number 2.
Know who you're going against, know your personnel and guys you're going to match up with majority of times. Most of the times they're not, because most of the time I'm on tight ends, and sometimes I'm in a slot. So the first 2 games, you know, I was getting a feel for who I was going against every Sunday and what speed is like and how they play the game and how smart they are. So now, just for me, I got to dial in even more and just focus in on my assignment and do what I got to do.
Now we love him. Before, we hated him when he was a Florida Gator. Now he's one of us. Now he's a New Orleans Saint, and we are big fans of C.J. Gardner-Johnson. No question about that. So, Saints and the Jets, again, how much do you play your guys? You got to get some continuity. You got to get some game situations under your belt. You always take the risk, always, of injuries. But if you see enough early enough, you pull them, you get them out of there, and you go with everybody else and just get ready for that season opener. Saints will be breaking camp soon. They'll get into their normal routine of things, and the season is just about upon us. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And you know, so many expectations across the board. I mean, Raging Cajun fans are expecting bigger and better things in year number two of Billy Napier. I don't think there's any question about that. I think the schedule is far more doable and favorable for them this year. LSU, it's fans are expecting a great season with the opportunity of going to Tuscaloosa and beating Alabama and getting to the college football playoffs. This was the year that everyone has envisioned for LSU. And now they've got their quarterback that they feel very, very comfortable and confident with. They've got skilled position people everywhere. Can the offensive line just stay together and be there? Everything else seems to be in place. Everything seems to be in place. And for the Saints, that window of opportunity is getting more narrow and more narrow with each and every game that passes by. Is this the year, 10 years to the day, 10 years anniversary of the Saints winning their one and only Super Bowl? The talent is there. Can they get the breaks? Can they stay injury free? Can the defense force and create turnovers? Can they have some good fortune along the way? That's how it all comes into play, and it does for every team. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a great season across the board for football here in this state. I think Nicholls State's going to be really, really good. I do. Tulane's going to be a tough out for people. Tough out. Tech's always good. You know, McNeese always good. So it's a great, great time for football in this state. And it's a great time to be Grant Delpit, because he, as his coach says, is the best returning defensive player in the country. What makes him tick? How special was it for him to be given that number 7 jersey that Patrick Peterson wore and Tyrann Mathieu wore? Now it's Grant Delpit's. He liked the comparisons, but he wants to be on his own island. Wilson Alexander did an in-depth study with him, and we'll get the information from him next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. 11 days away from the opener, LSU, Georgia Southern. And more lists are out. The AP All-American team, ESPN's, CBS, everybody's out there. And one person amongst others that stand out, he's on every list, and that is Grant Delpit. Quite a season he had as a true sophomore. And Wilson Alexander joins us now from The Advocate. He did an in-depth study, and The Advocate's football preview is out today. So go get yourself your actual copy, or you can go online and see it. But Wilson, you and Scott and everybody involved, just a terrific job. That's a lot of work, but well done, man. Really well done. Thanks for the time.
Hey, thanks for having me on, and I appreciate the kind words about the tab. It did take a lot of man and women hours to get that off the ground.
It's well worth it. But you did a story on Grant Delpit, and here's a kid that it seems like ever since he was knee-high to his parents' eyes, he was an LSU fan, and neither Hurricane Katrina or negative recruiting or anything like that was going to deter him from coming to LSU, was it?
No, it pretty much wasn't. I mean, he grew up, they were originally born he was in New Orleans. They lived there until about he was 6, and that's when Hurricane Katrina came through, and they left, and they lost everything. in the storm. So they moved to Houston, lived for a little bit with some family there, and then got their own house and settled into living in Houston. And that's where they've lived ever since. But Grant, even through that time, he just kept rooting for LSU. They would come back to, you know, Saints games, and he'd run along, you know, the concourse at Saints games, and he loved LSU in New Orleans. And so that's really, obviously he didn't grow up for most of his childhood there, but it's still where he really sort of considered home in a way.
I don't know if people really understand quite, you know, this is a true junior now, and in his true second season of college football, he became one of only now 9 LSU players in their illustrious history to be a unanimous All-American. That's just remarkable, the kind of year he had a year ago.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. The thing that makes Grant stand out so much as a safety, you even can call him quite that, because is how versatile he is. And I say you can even call him that because he sort of plays all over the field. Dave Aranda, you know, got to love a guy like that who we can just use in so many different ways, blitzing and man coverage, zone, coming up to play along the line of scrimmage and stop the run. Obviously, he has the instincts to sniff out that fake field goal attempt when they played Georgia. I mean, he was phenomenal. And so there's a reason that, you know, kind of coming into this year, he's got a ton of hype. ESPN ranked him the number 4 player in the country. He's on all these All-American teams, like you mentioned. And, you know, now he's got expectations of trying to go back-to-back unanimous All-American.
Tell me about the young man himself off the football field. He seems to be very humble. He seems to be well-rooted. He seems to have had a great upbringing by parents who did things the right way. What sense do you get for him, the person, rather than just the football player?
Yeah, that's definitely a good question. You know, when I was, you know, working the story and talking to people, trying to get a sense, he had this just, you know, insane year last year where his life was suddenly thrust into the public eye and people wanted to get to know Grant Delpit and sort of at least find a moment with Grant Delpit. And, you know, everyone who I talked to for the story just said that, you know, he handled that so well, and that it was obviously something that he had to adjust to, because that's, you know, a very sudden thing to happen in your life. But he handled it well, and, you know, it was something that he adjusted to. He sort of, you know, figured out how to manage it, and he enjoyed it. But he stayed himself throughout the way. The words that kept coming up were humbled and grounded, and that he hasn't changed himself despite the circumstances around him changing. He was definitely raised by some, you know, polite parents. Speaking to them was a joy. So, same with his grandmother. They all loved their Grant Delpit, and he seems to come from a good family, and they've raised him as such.
It's rather fitting that he's got the number 7 jersey, which is kind of, look, if you don't wear that jersey right, they'll take it away from you, right? There was a wide receiver that wore it that didn't get to have it very long, too much pressure with it. It's significant and symbolic, and you're basically the best player on the team. That's what you are, and many great ones have worn it. And it's rather fitting that he got it, because he used to go to sleep every night looking at it, didn't he?
Yeah, so I thought that was just so such a telling detail. You know, he had a Tyrann Mathieu number 7 jersey, purple one, that he hung above his bed at IMG when he was there as a senior in high school. He brought it with him to LSU, and he had it above his bed 2 years at LSU, too. I don't know so much about this year, but especially because now it's his jersey, you know, now he's the next one to be wearing that number 7, and he's really embraced all the expectations that have come with that, and being the top playmaker. It seems like it's in a position that he's wanted to be in for years, you know, looking up at that number 7, he wanted to wear that number 7 himself, and now that he's got it, it's not something that he's taking for granted.
He's so versatile. If you ask him, you know, where do you want to play? Does he want to play deep free safety? Does he want to be close to the line? What does he want to do? Because they're going to use him everywhere, but what's his favorite role?
I don't know if he necessarily has a favorite role. It's interesting. Yeah, as you're asking the question, what does he want to do? He wants to win a national championship. I mean, he has, you know, individual goals, the Thorpe Award and you know, different things like that he would obviously love to win, but the thing that goes above all else is a national championship, because he grew up wanting, you know, rooting for LSU to win a national championship, and he hasn't seen it in a while, and that's what he wants to bring back here. So when you ask him, well, what's your favorite role, like, where do you like to play, he'll play anywhere. He doesn't seem to mind much, because he just wants to do whatever that's going to help this team win a national championship, because it's what he's dreamed of accomplishing for so long.
By the numbers, he was only the only Division I player in the country last season with five total interceptions and five sacks. That kind of shows you his versatility. The back end and getting to the quarterback, that's kind of just remarkable numbers on his part. Yes, he wants to win a national championship, but I think alongside that, I think, you know, he's been compared to so many. When he first got to campus, I remember they calling him Big Mal, because they kind of compared him to Jamal Adams and all that. But I think he wants to be the first and the one and only Grant Delpit, and I think he wants that name to kind of to last forever in LSU football.
Yeah, you're right on the money. That's what we sort of talked about a little bit when, you know, around the story, was just that, yeah, when he first got to LSU, I think it was Baby Mal, because he resembled Jamal Adams in so many ways in the way that he played. But like, his parents weren't crazy about that, because they were like, well, we want to know about our son. We want people to know our son. And Grant, you know, he saw it as respect. He's like, wow, okay, they want me to, they look at me like this. Okay, I've got some big shoes to fill. But over time, you know, he's really taken on that number seven. He's taken on, you know, DBU and all these sort of legacies, all these people who have come before him. But he's sort of emerging from all those comparisons now here in his junior year, where you see Grant Delpit and you think Grant Delpit, you think of his own, of, you know, it's just him. You don't see Jamal Adams as much, because he's really made himself stand out. And it's kind of going back to the national championship thing. And I asked him, well, what's going to do that? Like, what's going to cement your legacy here? And that's what he said it was going to be. It was like, the best way to do that is to win a national championship. There's plenty of people before me who have individual accolades. Fewer people have a national championship, and those are the ones that you truly remember. And so that's part of the reason that he wants to accomplish that, is because it's going to solidify his status in LSU lore.
No question. Again, only one of nine unanimous All-Americans in the history of LSU football. He wears number seven. His coach calls him the best returning defensive player in the country. I'm curious as to what some of the other Tigers say about him, like a Joe Burrow or maybe a Kalavon Chaisson or whoever it might be, the respect that he has earned from them.
Yeah, I mean, they rave about him. You know, they really, especially, you know, there's a quote from Kalavon in the story about, you know, how Grant has handled the way this last year has gone and his, you know, his rise in fame. And Kalavon is like, he's the same person. And LSU so respects that. And Kalavon said, because it doesn't mess up the chemistry in the locker room. You don't get this guy who's all about me, 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 because he's still very much about the team. And because he's still very humble about everything that he's going through. And so LSU and his teammates just respect him for that, because he's still putting the team ahead of himself. And then also in practice, they don't love – Burrow doesn't like having to throw against them. It's not the most fun thing in the world for him.
Yeah, he and Christian Fulton both named preseason All-Americans on the AP team, Delpit first team, Fulton second team. I wonder what he likes to do more. I wonder what gets him going more, sacking the quarterback or intercepting the quarterback?
I don't know. That never came up in our conversations. I didn't think to ask him that one.
Okay. Well, you get a chance to ask him. Next time you see him, ask him that one. And then tell us, because I'm kind of curious as a guy that does everything. You know, LSU has told me that if things go in a great way for him, that they're ready for a Heisman Trophy publicity push. But, yeah, you know, he doesn't return kicks. He doesn't return punts. And so that works against him. But he's going to have to be that guy. Look, everybody game plans for him. So I'm just curious to see, aren't you what Dave Aranda has in his laboratory devised for this guy, to hide him, to put him in the best advantage to make the plays that he's so capable of playing? I think that's what's one of the more intriguing things this season.
Oh, I agree 100%. You know, Dave is, you know, obviously, you know, kind of nicknamed the professor, and he's got this kind of crazy mind with how he can shift around a defense. And it's interesting because LSU on defense this year has so many pieces, but they have so many pieces that you know, you can fit in different positions who don't necessarily just like, okay, that guy's a safety, that guy's a corner. Because Grant, like we've been talking about, is you can play him all over the field. And so not just Grant, but the defense as a whole, it's going to be really interesting to see how they pair guys. You know, they bring Jacoby Stevens down closer to the line of scrimmage, and because he did that some last year. And then Grant's obviously the biggest part of that because he's the best player on the field.
Yeah, well, Wilson Alexander of The Advocate, it's a great part of your Advocate newspaper that's out today. It's all about the college football preview, and you guys do a tremendous, tremendous job. I greatly appreciate the time. It sounds like we're both fans of Grant Delp. It seems to have his head on right. He has goals for not only himself, but more importantly for the team, and the players respect him, and the coaches respect him. Not only for his talent on the field, but for the person he is off the field. I'm a big fan of him. I wish him nothing but the best.
Jordy, I appreciate the time today, and thanks again for having me.
You got it, buddy. You take care. Again, the last unanimous All-American, Mo Claiborne, back in 2011. He earned first-team recognition from all five of the major organizations that publish such lists. Grant Delpit, superstar in the making. He really, truly is. I will take a timeout. We'll come back. 337-706-0111 is the number. We'll be back with more of the Jordy Helper Show, brought to you by Hooters. For all your fantasy football league parties, contact Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. They'll take good care of you. Lots of gift items. Oh, I'm telling you, they got a swag bag for you that you won't believe. Hooters just makes you happy. We'll be back.
All the best guests join the Jordy Holtberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, sign up. Let's fill the joint up. If you can't beat me in fantasy football, you're bad. You're just bad. So come on, rub it in on. Just plummel me. Just take me to school. Please take me to school. I'm looking forward to all of that. A couple of little tidbits here as we close up hour number one. Final score, LSU basketball team game three of their trip to Spain from Barcelona. LSU defeats the Barcelona All-Star team 107-78 to improve to 2-1 on the trip. They've got one more trip to go. Seven players in double figures. Cooper and Graves with 13 each. Bishop and Manning had 11. Watford and Williams had 12 each. So no big deal. Matt Hyatt had 10. So there you have it. They're not very good, Barcelona, I'm telling you. But it is what it is. On the baseball front, some news. LSU, it's amazing to me. It's either feast or famine. I mean, we've been saying forever, got to get some left-handed pitchers. Well, the Tigers added another lefty to its roster, Kendall Burnett, a 6'3" freshman from California. LSU now has four left-handed pitchers on its roster. They've got a total of 37 players, so they need to get down to 35 by the spring. So have no fear. Attrition will happen, and they'll get it done. Speaking of baseball, did you know that for 26 of the past 29 seasons, LSU has had at least one former player make his major league debut? The Tigers have produced a total of 76 major leaguers during their baseball history. Earlier this season, infielder Austin Nola was called up in June to the Seattle Mariners big league roster. We'll add another former Tiger as former LSU outfielder Jake Fraley was promoted today to the active roster of the Seattle Mariners. Fraley played at LSU from 2014 through 2016. He's going to join the Mariners in St. Pete, Florida for their series against the Tampa Bay Rays. Fraley was the Rays' second-round draft choice in 2016, and now becomes the 18th LSU player coached by Palmieri to reach the big leagues. He was traded to Seattle in November. He's been pretty darn good in the Mariners' minor league organization with 19 homers and 80 runs batted in this season. So Fraley working his way up. Now he gets his chance. The other Maneri-coached LSU players to reach the major league, see if you recognize some of these. Alex Bregman, pitcher, Aaron Nola. I mean, how good are they? DJ LeMahieu, how good is he for the Yankees? Austin Nola, really tearing it up now. Kevin Gausman, pitcher, Nick Goody. Outfielder, Andrew Stevenson. Pitcher, Ryan Eads. Couple of infielders, Jacoby Jones and Ryan Schimpf. How about Lafayette's finest outfielder, Mikey Matuk? And then a slew full of pitchers, Nick Rumbelow, Lewis Coleman, Charlie Furbush, Ryan Verdugo, Anthony Renato, and infielder Matt Clark. It's a who's who's list. And again, Jake Fraley promoted to the big leagues by the Mariners. So we wish him nothing but the best there. LSU back on the practice field again today. They're getting healthier and healthier as the days go by, and that's a great thing because that's all that matters now, just getting healthy. Yes, that's the key. One member of LSU's 2019 signing class still hasn't reported to campus, but it appears he could be doing so very soon. At the start of camp, Coach O announced that he didn't know what was going to happen with linebacker signee Dante Starks. Hopefully he'll be eligible for this year, but he still has a little bit of work to do. Yesterday, Starks tweeted, "When you get that call with a smiley face, just a few more days." So I don't know if he's going to be able to contribute this year or not, but he will be back. LSU had pads yesterday. A lot of players returned, all on offense. All the running backs were back, as was guard Chasen Hines. However, Damian Lewis, the other guard, remained out. On defense, Apu Aika, Grant Delpit, Kalevon Chaisson returned. Christian Fulton remained out. Let's see. A couple of comments from players in player interviews. Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase both said that freshman Devontae Lee is going to be a real red zone threat. He's jumping over defensive backs to catch balls every single day. And center Lord Cushenberry said that John Emery reminds him of a young LeSean McCoy because he's so shifty. I like that. Jefferson also said that the offense is going to be, quote, much better than last year. I know we have to take a wait-and-see approach, and I'm of that ilk. I really am. But it certainly appears more so than ever before. And I don't think Coach O is nearly as stubborn as Les Miles was. But it looks like the players have bought in, and they're believing in this, and they're having some fun with it. So we'll see. How much do they show in game number one before they play Texas? I don't know. Why not show it? Why not get better at it? Give Texas a lot of things to think about. But anyway, that's for another day. We'll talk about LSU's opening opponent in hour number two. We'll have a preview of Georgia Southern. We'll have a preview of the Cajuns opener against Mississippi State. All following our Hot Topic segment. We'll have a little history lesson, some birthday wishes, and more. All coming your way. Hour number two, the Jordy Helfert Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We'll be right back.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Holtberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037thegame on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go. How are you? How's your Tuesday so far? Hope it's been great and getting better and better by the minute. For the next 60 minutes, you've dialed us up here on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. CD back in the master control suite, spinning the tunes, pushing all the buttons in the 237 Roof Studios. Busy second hour. We've got a preview of Georgia Southern, LSU's home opener. We've got a preview of Mississippi State, the Raging Cajuns' neutral field opener on the 31st. And we start off, as always, though, with our daily walk around the sports water cooler. So, CD, let's get rolling, baby. Hit that button.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious. Decidedly better.
Have you taken this chicken sandwich challenge, Clint? Have you gone around and purveyed the different types of sandwiches out there that is of hot and heavy debate now?
I have not been a part of that debate, Jordy. I have not taken that challenge because, mind you, I'm always going to stick with Chick-fil-A as being the king, but I'm willing to give the Popeye's chicken sandwich a shot.
Ooh, don't sell my boy short. Boy, don't sell Popeye's short now. I'm just telling you. Anyway, I don't eat the fried stuff. I'm trying to watch my svelte figure. I got to go look good for that fantasy football draft party at
Twin Peaks
coming up in September. So yeah, Twin Peaks, and you're helping me, big guy. So just be ready.
Oh yeah, I just got a call actually during the break to get another person in that league. Still plenty of spots available. So make sure and you get your shots up, because trust me, we're going to have plenty of spots taken away before too long. But Jordy, I just saw this pop up and I want to get your immediate thoughts on this.
What? All right.
There's a new bowl in town. The Sun Bowl everybody knows about. It's going to be going down on December 31st. But the Sun Bowl released today that the Frosted Flakes is going to be replacing Hyundai as a sponsor. So instead of calling it the Frosted Flakes Bowl, Jordy, it's going to be called, get this, the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. How awesome is that?
I love that. Much better than Frosted Flakes. Tony the Tiger, yeah, that's perfect. Good for them. There have been some weird names out there. No offense to some of these companies. I know they work very hard, but please, the Poulan Weed Eater Bowl. But the Tony the Tiger Bowl, I like that one.
It's awesome, Jordy.
What are they going to? Yeah, they got to come up with something for Vegas too. They got to come up with some name for that one. Besides the Vegas Bowl, they got to come up with some really good one for that one. But no, I love it. Tony the Tiger Bowl, awesome marketing. Yeah, way to go.
The Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. It's definitely a mouthful. But I can't wait to see that go down. But, of course, I think we need to get back to what's the big storylines around the world of sports. And we got to start things off last night, Jordy. I know it's preseason football. It's relatively meaningless. But I think this could be trouble ahead for the San Francisco 49ers. Jimmy G, absolutely awful in his return from ACL injury. 0.0 QB rating, Jordy. I think we could have done better.
How do you do that as a professional player? That's I'm going to give him the he was rusty answer on that one. Golly, and hopefully he'll get to week number three. But if I'm a 49er fan, I'm like, holy cow. But you know what the biggest story in the world of sports was? Come on now, you can't miss this one. How about the team from River Ridge, Louisiana, my backyard, winning in the Little League World Series to survive and advance? That's awesome.
They keep on surviving, Jordy. It's absolutely fantastic. And that was something I was overhearing online after they lost the opener, was the fact that they could wind up bouncing back and making some noise in the elimination rounds, and they're really showing their worth. It's definitely going to be entertaining to see what happens with them as the Little League World Series progresses.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I saw a young lady playing second base for one of the teams. She was good. Had that long blonde ponytail pulled back. She's making plays in the field. That's so much fun. Good for those kids. And how about Drew Brees sending a congratulatory video to the team saying, man, you're living out my dream. My dream was always to go to the Little League World Series. I didn't get a chance to go, but you are. And I'm kind of jealous of you. But that Super Bowl kind of win kind of alleviated that. But good for them. Good for them.
It's absolutely fantastic, Jordy, to see what's going on with the River Ridge baseball team. First team from New Orleans to make the trip to Williamsport, if I'm not mistaken. We're going to stick with the state of Louisiana involving a former LSU wide receiver, Jordy. And that is Odell Beckham Jr. And he definitely had some pointed comments towards the New York Giants recently, saying that they basically traded him to Cleveland to let him die. And that's just like, just the way he put that on a tee. It is absolutely just absolute masterpiece from OBJ.
I don't know what he's doing with that. He comes out and says that. Baker Mayfield comes out and says that the pick of Daniel Jones in the first round blows his mind. What is, obviously, Baker Mayfield's trying to make OBJ happy by showing him his discontent with the Giants for whatever reason that is. So you got two Browns hating on the Giants. Okay, just go play. Go play and let's see how many wins you get. That's the bottom line. As Bill Parcells says, your record tells you who you are, right? It is what it is.
That's basically what happened when you look, obviously, you're talking about the Daniel Jones comments that Baker Mayfield made. That's kind of that's kind of the gist of it when it comes to what he said about it. Basically, he was 17-19 at Duke. Why is he the number six pick? It's purely from a business perspective, I think we're talking about with Baker Mayfield. And mind you, he's definitely since kind of crawfished some of that stuff back. This is all from a feature of GQ, but he's kind of crawfished a little bit on that one.
Yeah. He said the thing that aggravated him more than anything in his life, basically, was having to apologize for taking the OU flag and slamming it into the ground, into the artificial turf when they beat Ohio State. He said when he apologized, he was asked how sincere was it on a level of 1 to 10. He said a 0. he didn't want to apologize at all. So I like Baker Mayfield. Always have. He's a winner. And I think that was his point, as you documented. Daniel Jones didn't win at Duke, but I think Baker had a whole lot more talent around him at Oklahoma than Jones did at Duke. So we'll see. We'll see when Jones gets his chance and see what he can do.
I'd have to agree with you. I think that's definitely going to be what happens going forward is where we see with Baker Mayfield, because he definitely is a brash personality. And sticking with that interview for a minute, Jordy, he also mentioned, this is the one thing that really stuck out to me, Jordy, with his GQ feature, was the fact that he said outright he did not look at anybody else's playbook. Like, let's say, for instance, he mentioned the Los Angeles Chargers talked to him, and he said he didn't even look at the playbook because they were picking 17th. No way he would fall that far. Jordy, that is a lot of big confidence for the former Oklahoma Sooner.
I like it. Yep. I like it. I like his bravado, and he backs it up on the field. His team loves him. They want to play for him. I'm all in on Baker Mayfield. How about your boy Antonio Brown wearing a certified helmet practice today with the Raiders? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's fine. Our long national nightmare is officially over, Jordy. Those nasty feet have been taken care of. You've got him finally wearing the right helmet. Jordy, we can finally breathe easy. I can finally go to sleep because I know for a fact that Antonio Brown will be playing for the Oakland Raiders week one. Our long national nightmare is finally over, at least at that aspect. I think we also got to bring up the Dallas Cowboys. Breaking news from them. An extension has been made official, Jordy, to Jalen Smith.
Oh, wow. That's not the big three, but important. So the dominoes will fall. They will fall. And as John Gruden said about Antonio Brown, he's all in. Yes, he is all in. So The quarterback for Texas says we're back, and John Gruden says his wide receiver is all in. So those are the new catchphrases around the football world.
It's going to be fun, Jordy. It's going to be fun to see what happens with those Oakland Raiders going forward. But, of course, last one, real quick, Jordy. We talked about it earlier in the program about Taysom Hill's, about Steve Young, the Steve Young-Taysom Hill comparisons. Do you believe that after hearing what you heard from Sean Payton in hour one?
I think Steve Young's a much better passer. Taysom Hill's got a long way to go. I think Taysom Hill can run now. There's no question about that. Can he throw it like Steve Young? That's yet to be determined. But I'm all for giving the guy a chance. I'm glad he's on our team and not on some other team. I love the guy. There's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by the best hot sauce every day. And that is Cajun Chef, the B-Art family right there in St. Martinville. We use the finest spices, the finest peppers, coming up with the finest hot sauce, Cajun Chef hot sauce. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Previews of the Tigers and Raging Cajuns openers, Georgia Southern, Mississippi State, next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Well, we're about 11 days away from the start of the college football season for LSU, and a team very familiar to Sun Belt Conference fans and the Raging Cajuns, but very unfamiliar to LSU fans, is Georgia Southern from the Sun Belt Conference, located in beautiful Statesboro, Georgia. It's the first meeting between these two ball clubs. And so I thought we'd get a little inside look at what Georgia Southern represents. They went 10-3 last season under Chad Lunsford, turned a lot of heads. So Caitlin Sells reports on Georgia Southern for the George Anne. She is the managing editor there, and she's kind enough to join us today. Hello, Caitlin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I really, really appreciate the time. Boy, what a roller coaster ride of an off season it's been, right? With bird poop taking center stage with a quarterback that was at one point thought it was something else. Now it's not. What's the latest on your quarterback, Shea Wirtz?
Our quarterback, Shai, he is back and running with the program. He made a comment earlier about how good he feels just be able to, you know, focus back in on football, zero in on football, have that be his only focus as of right now because of all of the craziness that happened back at the end of July. We're just glad to have him, you know, 100%. We were worried there for a second thinking that he might be suspended for the first game. But no, now that he's coming back and 100%, we're super excited to see what he's going to pull out.
So you get a quarterback, but then you lose a backup quarterback. You get a running back who's no longer a former UTEP running back. He's no longer with the team. But then you get a former, another former running back who's now turned eligible. So it's kind of like a revolving door, isn't it?
It has been. Yesterday was a big day with all these different announcements, you know, with Joshua Fields deciding that he was no longer with the team, also noticing that Jaden Jenkins was no longer on the roster. But, you know, big news with J.D. King being eligible, like absolute craziness. You know, we're all just super excited, especially about J.D. King, because we originally did not think that he was going to be eligible for this season because his original request to be eligible this season was denied. And it's just big, big, crazy news for us.
He's a transfer from Oklahoma State. He's been practicing with the team, right? Has he turned heads in practice?
He has. He has not been able to comment for the media yet since he just was determined eligible. But he transferred to Georgia Southern back in January and has been practicing with the team. He went through spring practice as well as fall camp. You know, during the scrimmage, their second scrimmage that was played last Saturday, there were a few name calls that were really exciting to hear, but, you know, no one really wanted to get their hopes up, not knowing whether or not he'd be eligible. But now that he's eligible, it's something that, you know, everyone's looking forward to.
Caitlin Sells, kind enough to join us. Gosh, is there a more popular person on campus than the head coach, Chad Lunsford? They went 2-10 prior to him getting there. He comes in first full season as the Eagles head coach. He goes 10-3. They're the talk of the Sun Belt Conference. They capped it off with a Camellia Bowl win over Eastern Michigan. God, what is it about Chad Lunsford?
You know, Chad Lunsford, he just really has everyone buy in. I think the biggest problem back when we were under Tyson Summers is that you could tell that the boys just didn't want to play under him. They weren't motivated. They weren't fired up, you know. Going the first couple games, being completely wiped out, knocked out, it was a lot for them in that 2017 season. So Chad Lunsford coming in, you know, all guns blazing, super motivated, you know, super fired up, throwing in, you know, the elbow with the people's chair and all that kind of stuff. It just got them super fired up, super excited to be, you know, part of Georgia Southern, part of being an Eagle again. And I think that's what those boys were missing because, you know, you notice it's basically the same team that competed in that 2017 season, that competed in the 2018 season. The huge difference was just the coaching and the coach, you know, had them buy in. It's all about, you know, caring about what you're doing and having pride for your school and just being fired up. And I think that's what those boys needed, and that's what Chad Lunsford provides.
Caitlin Sells of the George Ann covering Georgia Southern football for us here on the Jordy Helfberg Show. If you could describe Chad Lunsford's philosophy on offense with Wirtz at the command, what does it look like?
Well, Chad Lunsford has a good saying this season, good to great. You know, we were good last season and he wants to see more. They're pulling out new things at practices that, you know, are interesting. I love the fact that, you know, a lot of people aren't very, you know, excited about a triple option offense. I personally like it. I think it works. I love to see Wirtz throwing the ball as much as he is running it, just because it's nice to see him gain confidence on the field and confidence in his passing, because we haven't really been known to be a passing team in the past.
So it's obviously a difficult type of an offense to prepare for because of the triple option. Not many teams run that, so I think that gives the Eagles an advantage.
It definitely does, and, you know, I think we run it, and we run it well when, you know, we know what we're doing, and especially with, you know, we have such a strong offense. We have, you know, Shai Wirtz is now a senior, a redshirt senior. He knows the game. He knows what he's doing. He's confident. We have a plethora of running backs that, you know, are absolutely crazy, as well as the fact that we have, you know, just, I just think our offense in general is just made up of a ton of great players, and it's really hard to, you know, just pinpoint where exactly it is successful, just because they all work so well together.
Got to win up front, right? How's that offensive line? I saw where your right tackle, Brian Miller, was injured. Is that a serious injury, or is he going to be back in time for the opener?
At the current moment, that is kind of vague. We don't really have a definite answer. We do know that he is out at the current moment. You know, some of the comments that have been made is Coach, you know, commented that, you know, it's still being looked at. They'll update us as they learn more. And, you know, another player commented, you know, just saying that he's in their prayers. They're still supporting him and they're supporting him and all that kind of stuff. But it's just next man up, and they've got to focus on what's ahead.
All right. Tell me a little bit. What should I know about the lovely city of Statesboro?
The lovely city of Statesboro. It's a small city, but it's a fun city. I will say it's definitely a college town. Fun times had here. It's honestly such a great environment here. Everyone just is so invested in Georgia Southern here. You know, game days here, are, you know, probably not as crazy as they're over at LSU, but they're still a fun time. You know, everyone here, from the students to the alumni, are just so invested in being an Eagle, and they take so much pride in it. It's a great atmosphere.
So with that being said, will y'all bring your full allotment of those that were offered tickets? Will Georgia Southern make a presence in Tiger Stadium on the 31st?
Oh, for sure. We may be thought of as a small school, but we are a loud crowd. From, you know, early morning tailgating all the way to the end of the game, I can promise you our presence will be made known.
What's the biggest place that Georgia Southern has been of late in their non-conference travels?
You know, last season we traveled up to Clemson. It was, you know, not the prettiest of games, but we like to take pride in the fact that we helped them to no scoring in the first quarter. And, you know, the bowl game was another big one, considering the year before we did not have enough wins to go to a bowl game. And this being it was our second bowl game in school history, mm-hmm. and just the fashion in which the bowl game ended was, you know, absolutely insane. It had everyone on their feet cheering, screaming, going crazy in the rain. It was a great experience. And then, yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So Georgia Southern, Chad Lunsford's got them going in the right direction. Maybe snuck up on some people a year ago. Not anymore, when they went 6-2 in the Sun Belt and 10-3 overall. Come early if you get the opportunity. I don't think you've ever seen anything quite like what you're about to see when it comes to tailgating is concerned. LSU fans kind of know what they're doing, and they will share everything with you. So come early, stay, have fun. We greatly appreciate the time. Maybe we can get an update from you next week on the health of the club and everything along those lines. But, Caitlin, thank you so much from the lovely village of Statesboro.
Yeah, no problem. I will see y'all up there for the fun little matchup that's about to happen.
There you go. All right, Caitlin, take care. That's Caitlin Sells, who is our reporter for Georgia Southern. Now, the Raging Cajuns get ready to open up against the Mississippi State Bulldogs. We'll get a look inside the Bulldog program. Who's going to be their starting quarterback? Logan Lowry joins us next to discuss just that. This is the Jordy Helfert Show. 103.7 The Game. 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station.
The Blonde Bomber is back. And better than ever, as you're locked into the Jordy Helfert Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
All right, welcome back as we continue our coverage of leading up to the season openers. And the Raging Cajuns from UL Lafayette will travel down to New Orleans to take on the Mississippi State Bulldogs on August 31st, and nobody in the SEC, Alabama included, lost more talent to the NFL draft than Mississippi State did last season. Who's coming back? Who's going to be their starting quarterback? And how much pressure is on their head coach? Logan Lowry, kind enough to join us from the Tupelo Daily Journal to give us the inside look on the Bulldogs. Logan, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. So let's start with the big elephant in the room. Who's going to be the starting quarterback?
Well, Joe Moritz supposedly going to try to announce that at some point this week. I've got a hunch that it's going to be Tommy Stevens, the graduate transfer from Penn State. But, you know, obviously Keaton Thompson is 2-0 as a starter and was expected to be the starter prior to Tommy Stevens transferring in, and he was kind of the backup the last couple of years behind Nick Fitzgerald, and obviously is a talented player. It's not a knock against him, but, mm-hmm. you know, Tommy Stevens has more experience in Joe Moorhead's offense than Keaton Thompson does. So, you know, he plays for him at Penn State and knows right. the offense well. And, you know, you don't really pick up a grad transfer quarterback, especially one that was expected to start at Penn State this year, and have him ride the pine. I mean, he's you know, was probably thought it was going to be a good experience for him to come in and start right away, and I think that's probably what's going to happen this year.
LSU fans very familiar with grad transfer quarterbacks, so and they're thankful they got one in Joe Burrow. So talk to me about, you know, the passing game was such a golly, an anomaly a year ago. God bless Nick Fitzgerald, but he had such a tough time passing it. Have they spent a lot of time trying to improve that aspect? And does this quarterback that you think is going to be the starter, does he improve the passing game?
I don't know that the passing game is going to be just leaps and bounds better than it was last year, but it can't really go anywhere but up. I mean, they struggled passing the ball last year. Yeah. Especially, I mean, there's you know, State won 8 games last year and should have won. I mean, they had the number one defense in the nation last year and won 8 games. I mean, they scored 7 or fewer points in 4 games last year. I mean, that's how bad the offense was. And, you know, and most of it was because of the passing game. I mean, they could run the ball. I mean, Nick Fitzgerald could run. Colin Hill can run. But, you know, when you can't pass the ball, teams just continually stack the box and, you know, force you to pass. And when you can't complete, you know, right around 50% of your passes, and most of them are short passes on top of that, you just, you know, they didn't really have any deep threats in the receiving game. And I think the offense is going to be better this year, but like I said, I don't know that it's going to be leaps and bounds better in the passing game, but I do expect it to be a little improved.
Defense can't be any better. I mean, you don't lose a Montez Sweat and a Jeffrey Simmons and a pair of playmaking safeties on the back end and get better. Do you? I mean, that's a lot of pro talent that's gone.
Well, like I said, they were the number one defense in the nation last year, so you can't really improve upon that. You know, it's tough to beat that. But, I still expect it to be a top 25 defense. I mean, they've got talent back coming back. The linebackers especially are really, really talented. They've got some guys that, like a Brian Cole coming back off of injury. He was really exceptional early on in the season and missed the final 8 games. With a torn pectoral muscle, he's a star in the making. He can make an impact on that defense the same way that Jonathan Abram did a year ago as a nickelback. And I think he's going to be an up and coming star in the SEC this year. The problem that they're going to have is finding ways to generate a pass rush, because last year, like I said, they had a Montez Sweat. I mean, the entire defensive front went to the NFL. So they're going to have to find different ways to generate a pass rush, whether it's blitzing the nickelbacks or blitzing the linebackers more, because, like I said, the linebackers are going to be a strength. But defensive tackle, not only did they lose their top 2 starters, they lost the 2 guys behind them as well. So that's a lot of depth lost at defensive tackle. So they've got some really inexperienced guys that are going to have to step up this year. And that's the biggest area of concern on defense, is just you know, right there in the middle, right there. Because the defensive ends, they had some guys that played a lot last year. They just weren't starters. But defensive tackle, they lost just about everything that they had.
Logan Lowry, the Tupelo Daily Journal, kind enough to join us here talking about the Mississippi State Bulldogs, the Raging Cajun season opener, 11 days away in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. My gosh, Kyron Hill, Nick Gibson, y'all can run the football, right? That shouldn't be an issue again this year.
No, it won't be. I mean, Colin Hill, if they can keep him healthy. I mean, that's the thing last year, is he kind of got banged up kind of midway through the season and you know, missed some time and just wasn't at 100% towards the tail end of last year. Nick Gibson has been really good in the times, you know, in the opportunities that he was given. He was kind of the third team guy last year. He's moving up into that backup role this year. But that's really all they've got. They signed a guy at a junior college, and they're still hoping to get him in. He still hasn't arrived yet at camp, but he's a Kareem Walker. He's a former Michigan running back. He began his career at Michigan and then transferred to junior college, and they signed him, but he still hasn't made it into camp, so, and I don't know that he will, but they were kind of dependent on him to be that number 3 guy this year. So there's not really a whole lot of depth behind Colin Hill and Nick Gibson, but Mississippi State will be able to run the ball. Obviously, Tommy Stevens or Keaton Thompson, just whichever one of those guys is the starting quarterback. Both of those guys are dual threat guys, so they're going to be able to run the ball with the quarterback some as well. So, you know, they're not going to have any trouble running the ball. It's throwing the ball that's going to be the issue again.
So the winner of the quarterback job is going to be the guy that throws the ball better, right? And from what you've heard and what you've seen, apparently Tommy Stevens is the guy.
Well, I don't know that it's anything that I've seen because practices are pretty, they've been closed.
Yeah.
I mean, the only bits of practices that we've been able to watch are all one-on-one drills. I haven't seen a, an offense line up against the defense or anything like that. But, you know, from what I've, you know, like I said, that's what Joe Moore had said he's going to base it on. He said that both of these guys are capable of running the ball and moving the ball that way. It's just going to come down to which one is the most accurate passer. And he's supposed to let us know maybe at the end, by the end of the week after their last scrimmage of which guy's going to win the job.
You know, it comes down, that state team of a year ago reminded me a lot of Les Miles' teams. They would try to run it down your throat. The passing game was non-existent, and they had a great defense. But when you look at the numbers, state averaged 7.5 yards per play in its 8 wins. That number shrunk to 3.5 yards per play in their 4 losses to LSU, Alabama, Florida, and Kentucky. So against the big boys, the big guys, they, like you said, stuffed the box, not able to run it, can't throw it. It reminded me a lot of some Les Miles teams. So I guess what I'm asking is what's the pressure cooker like on Joe Moorhead heading into just year number two?
Well, like I said, I mean, it's still won 8 games, and 8 games is going to, you know, keep your job at Mississippi State. There's really not a whole lot of hot seat talk, you know, going on there. But, you know, like I said, I don't think he's going to win too many more than, I mean, I think it's going to be about the same type of record again this year, 8 wins or so. But, and like I said, he's done a good job. I mean, this guy was a back-to-back offensive coordinator of the year coming into Mississippi State. Now, I don't know what happened, you know, and I don't know if it was just the first year or if it was just all come down to the quarterback not being able to throw the ball or whatever. Maybe he's got to get his own guy in there, quarterback. I'm not sure, but, you know, I expect the offense to be improved, you know, and like I said, the guy didn't forget how to coach offense in some of those ball games. It's just getting the system right because, like I said, you know, his system and Dan Mullen's system are, you know, they look similar as the way they line up, but they have two totally different philosophies on how offense works. I mean, Dan Mullen was all about running the ball. He didn't care if the quarterback ran the ball 20 times a game. And Joe Moorhead said he don't like to, you know, have the quarterback run the ball 7 or 8 times a game. So that's a huge difference in the offensive philosophy.
Very interesting. Does the defensive philosophy change at all, or is it just a plug-and-play type of thing? Because, I mean, again, not to bemoan the fact, but, boy, you lost a lot of really good players.
Yeah, like I said, but there's still a lot of talent left from that defense. And, you know, they're probably going to have to change up some of the things that they do. They're going to stay aggressive. You know, they still got Bob Shoup, the defense coordinator from last year, is back again this year. And like I said, he may have to do some different things, different style of blitzing, but the amount of blitzes that they use are going to be the same. They're still going to apply pressure all over the place, and it's still going to be a tough defense to move the football on. But they may have to do some things a little differently based on the personnel that they have.
What is the vibe or the mood about the opening game heading down to New Orleans, taking on Sun Belt Conference division champion from a year ago and the Raging Cajuns from Lafayette?
I really haven't heard a whole lot of people talking about it. Like I said, most people around here expect Mississippi State to go 3-0, you know, in their first 3 games. And, you know, most people are kind of just looking at that first SEC game when Kentucky comes here on September 21st. Like I said, you know, they open up with Louisiana Lafayette, Southern Miss comes to Mississippi State, and then Kansas State comes to Mississippi State. I mean, that should be 3 wins. I mean, they beat Louisiana Lafayette pretty good last year in Starkville. They beat Kansas State pretty good in Manhattan last year. So, you know, and then Southern Miss really just, you know, they pounded them the last time they played them as well. So, yeah, like I said, Mississippi State should be 3-0 going into their first SEC game.
A lot of people are saying 5-1 after 6, which would be quite a start to a season.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. I mean, obviously, Kentucky, what they had, you know, Benny Snell and Josh Allen off of defense, that was what was allowed Kentucky to win that game in Lexington last year. Mississippi State should be able to get them at home. They go to Auburn. That'll be a tough game for Mississippi State.
Yeah.
And then they
yeah.
got at Tennessee after that. And, you know, really don't know what Tennessee's got. It'll be the first time Mississippi State's played in Knoxville since 2008. So really don't know how they'll react to that stadium up there. And really don't know how much improvement Tennessee's going to have this year. I expect them to be a little bit better than they were a year ago.
He is Logan Lowry of the Tupelo Daily Journal. I guess the big news will come sometime this week as to who the starting quarterback is going to be. That seems to be what everybody wants to know. Losing a lot of talented players, but recruited well. Joe Moorhead, I remember in SEC Media Days, he says, I'm not going to be talking about rings and expectations. We're gonna kind of low-key it a little bit. Has he low-keyed it since?
Yeah, and I think he was surprised a little bit last year that his offense didn't work. I think he was a little embarrassed that he wasn't able to get the job done on that side of the ball, because even if the offense was just a little bit better, they win 10 games. I mean, they were two catches away from winning two other games, and probably could have added a couple more wins after that. Like I said, they didn't get beat that bad at LSU, didn't get beat that bad at Kentucky. But like I said, the offense just was pretty much non-existent in those games. And, you know, and then obviously the Florida game, if you make a catch, and then the bowl game, if you make a catch, you win both of those games. So, like I said, I think he kind of, you know, I don't know if he just kind of pumped the brakes a little bit on his expectations or what, but I think he's just kind of have it grinded out this season.
Has he kind of fit in now to the culture that is Starkville? And has Starkville adopted him now?
I think he fits in really well here. I mean, to be a guy that really hasn't spent that much time in the South, I think he's a better fit personality-wise than Dan Mullen was here. I mean, he's kind of a blue-collar type of guy. He's down to earth. He's very honest about things. He's a great dude. He really is. You know, he's just a really personable guy, and I think he fits in really well here.
All right, we look forward to it. Logan, we'll get to talk to you twice this year as they get ready to play. You play two teams from Louisiana, as always, the Tigers. Heading to Starkville this year, that's always interesting times, to say the very least. But thank you so much, and continue the great work for the Tupelo Daily Journal. Tell my buddy that covers Ole Miss hello for me, will you?
I definitely will. Thanks a lot.
All right, buddy, you take care. Logan Lowry, Tupelo Daily Journal. So we covered Georgia Southern. We've covered Mississippi State. Just kind of giving you a little taste. Hey, it didn't sound like they were too fired up. Cajuns, what do you think? They're not talking about it. Go spring that upset in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Yes, indeed. Why not? Why not? We're back to wrap things up. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game. 103.7thegame.com. Acadiana's sports station. Not talking about it. Are you kidding me? I'm sending the tape to Billy Napier right now.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia Exit in Bro Briggs. Frankie's got everything. Boy, he's stocking up as if he can fit anything else in his place. But he's stocking up for all the high school football jamborees, the regular season games, all the tailgating needs, items that you want to make your experience and your family's experience all the better. DC's Little Capital Exxon, nothing better than their cheeseburger in that true soul food deli that's tucked away in the corner to the right. You can dine in or get it to go. Always fresh, cooked to order, and ready. It is absolutely fabulous. It's my go-to stop. Anytime I'm traveling to Lafayette or back, D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, the lovely city of Burley, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit. It's great. It is great. LSU basketball played today against the Barcelona All-Stars, and the Tigers win in hoops 107-78. All 12 LSU players got in the game and scored. Tigers were 39 of 74 from the field, made 10 three-pointers. They were 19 of 28 from the free throw line. They had 47 rebounds and 26 assists. Kentlow sending over some information along the way. Six players scored in double figures for LSU as they improved to 2-1 on their trip. Obviously, the competition not up to par as it was in the opener. But, hey, you're getting to play. You're getting to see the world. Why the heck not? Why the heck not? I mean, good for them. Again, more praise and honor coming to Grant Delpit and Christian Fulton. Grant Delpit, first team AP preseason All-American. Christian Fulton, second team AP preseason All-American. Defense rules the roost, and LSU well represented on this one. But Clemson and Alabama, again, going along the ways. They are loaded. Those are the two teams everyone expects to be there when it counts at the end. It's like you just put them in ink. Those two are going to be in the Final Four, according to so many of the pundits. Alabama placed eight players on the first team. Eight. LSU's got two on two teams. Bama's got eight on the first team. And that doesn't even include their quarterback, who was selected to the second team behind, of course, Trevor Lawrence of Clemson. So they're going to be tough to beat, no question about that. But is this the year that LSU does it? Is this the year LSU makes it closer? They've had more success in Tuscaloosa than they've had against Alabama in Tiger Stadium. Go figure that. But they just haven't. But anyway, plenty of time to talk about all of that. Let's go to our daily history lesson today. It was on this day, August 20th, the year 2000. Gosh, it seems like forever and a day ago. And it was 19 years ago, Tiger Woods won the 2000 PGA Championship. And that victory made him the second golfer ever to win three majors in 1 year. And oh, what a year he had across the board. It just like he just dominated the sport like no one had seen before or has seen since. Tiger Woods wins his third straight major on this day, August 20th, the year 2000. If today is your birthday, August the 20th, man, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Let's see, you share with the likes of the younger group. Pop singer, happy 27th birthday to Demi Lovato. For the older group, happy 72nd birthday to Robert Plant, vocalist for Led Zeppelin. From the Today Show, the weatherman, happy 66th birthday, Al Roker. And from LSU football, happy birthday to Greg Jackson, was a terrific safety back in the day, and to Brett Besch. So, hope you have a lot of cake, a lot of ice cream, a gift or two. Hope you just have a great day. And if it's your anniversary, well, by golly, happy anniversary to each and every one of you. I hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Thanks to our guest, Wilson Alexander of The Advocate, for his in-depth look at the best player on the LSU football team, Grant Delpit. To Caitlin Sells of the George Ann with her report on LSU's home opener against Georgia Southern. Logan Lowry of the Tupelo Daily Journal for his inside look to the Cajuns opener against Mississippi State. Thank you to Clint Domain, producer extraordinaire, for getting it all together, making it sail smoothly. Thanks to all of you for listening, to our partners that make it possible each and every day. We only got one of these Tuesdays, August the 20th. Make it a great rest of your afternoon and evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfer. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.